Welcome, listeners, to Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy, and I'm here with you every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. I'm a health, food, and environmental reporter and media advocate, and every week on Connect the Dots, we discuss different aspects of all the things in the world that affect our personal health and our total health environment. For many years, I was a health reporter, reporting on all kinds of integrative medicine techniques and other things to help better personal health. And after a while, I began to recognize that a lot of the policy decisions we make as a society, the science we study, or the gaps in science, all actually impact the quality of our food, water, air, and earth, the kinds of products and toxicants and other things we're exposed to, and as a result, affect our health. So I broadened the lens in both my reporting on Alternet and the Huffington Post and Tent.com and other places, EcoWatch, as well as offer this show so that we can really see, go beyond the sort of meme, oh, we're all interconnected, but not really see how, and really get a detailed look at different ways that what's going on in our world affects us and our health and our children's future. I've covered fracking a great deal on this program. I was actually the first news cycle reporter to cover that topic, beginning back in the Huffington Post in around 2009. At that time, we had to teach people what the Halliburton loophole meant. Things have certainly progressed since then, thanks to excellent work by many organizations and teams. And one of those organizations is going to be speaking with us here today and Connect the Dots. And I'm very excited about it because it was one of our very earliest wake-up calls. For those of you who remember Gasland 1 or 2, which, you know, we've covered extensively in blogs and through guests on this program, you may remember that the nearby streams that Josh Fox knew from his childhood and was out to protect rather than lease for fracking, those were all streams that led into the Delaware River. And the Delaware River is going to be our, and all that surrounds it and helps it is going to be our topic today, because on the show, I'm very delighted to welcome the Delaware Riverkeeper. There's actually a riverkeeper whose responsibility is protecting the Delaware River. There's also an organization, the Delaware Riverkeeper, and we're going to be talking to the riverkeeper and the head of that organization today on Connect the Dots. I'm delighted to welcome Maya Van Rossum, the Delaware Riverkeeper. Welcome, Maya.
Thank you so much, and good morning.
Good morning. You know, first of all, because this is a national program, I'd love for you to tell people who may not have a map ready to hand or may not be familiar with the Delaware a little bit about the river itself.
Sure. The main stem Delaware River is 330 miles long, and its headwaters are found in the state of New York. And then the river then flows down. It actually flows through Pennsylvania, New Jersey. It's the border between those two states. And as you go lower down, it becomes the border between New Jersey and Delaware before it drains into Delaware Bay and then into the Delaware Ocean. So we have a four-state watershed, New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and Delaware.
And so that's quite a number of states that all are impacted by and impacting the river itself. I remember a few years back, there was a nationwide river organization that declared the Delaware the most endangered river in the United States. Why did they do that, and is that status still current?
Yeah, it was American Rivers. They have a program that they do every year where they identify the most endangered rivers in a given point in time or a given year. And a couple of years back, they did, as you said, identify the upper reaches of the Delaware River as amongst the most endangered rivers in the nation. There were a couple of other rivers designated that year. The designation actually carried through until the threat is removed, and the threat for which we were identified as the most endangered river still exists, and that is the potential for shale gas development. The upper portions of the Delaware River watershed are underlain by the Marcellus Shale, Utica Shale, and some other shales, which are an incredible target for unconventional gas drilling, for the drilling and the fracking that has wreaked so much havoc in other places in the nation, in other places in Pennsylvania, but which has not yet started in our watershed because of an incredible level of effort by my organization and others to keep drilling and fracking out of our watershed for many, many reasons, not the least of which is that 17 million people drink Delaware River water, including in the city of New York, which is not actually in our watershed, but they get a large proportion of their drinking water from our river.
So the river is actually feeding New York City as well as other places. Is there specific boroughs, or it just kind of feeds everywhere?
I actually think that most of the water that the city as a whole drinks comes from Delaware River water. There are some other Hudson River sources that go into the city. How that actually breaks out, I got to be honest with you, not at the top of my head. But I think the vast proportion of the water that the city drinks comes from the Delaware River. And the river, the water is so pure, clean, and pristine because of the efforts that have been undertaken to protect it, that water is actually unfiltered before it gets drunk. It's because it is that pure, and it is that purity that we are trying to protect with a lot of activities, including keeping drilling and fracking out of our watershed.
So what is the current status of efforts to drill and frack in, around, or near the watershed in a way that would affect the Delaware River?
So in the Delaware River watershed, we have a regulatory agency. It's actually created by an interstate compact that involves the four watershed states of New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and Delaware, and the federal government. And that compact creates an agency, a regulatory body called the Delaware River Basin Commission. The commissioners are the governors of the four states and a representative for the president, which is right now an Army Corps of Engineers colonel. That agency has incredible strength if they choose to exercise it. And that entity, the Delaware River Basin Commission, has put in place a moratorium against shale gas development. Now, this moratorium is pretty solid right now, but it could be removed by a simple vote of the five commissioners, the representatives of the four governors, and the president. The reason why we have the moratorium, actually, that story begins about 20 years ago when the Delaware Riverkeeper Network, my organization, submitted a petition to the Delaware River Basin Commission to get the Delaware River declared an outstanding national resource water under the Clean Water Act. And that designation is reserved for the most clean, pristine, beautiful, healthful waters in our nation. We put forth that petition and supported it with a lot of advocacy. We had a lot of participation from organizations and individuals throughout the watershed. And when all was said and done, sort of taking a very long story but making it short, just going right to the end, when all was said and done, 197 miles of the Delaware River from its headwaters down to Washington Crossing, Pennsylvania, was given this special designation, but not as outstanding national resource waters. The Delaware River Basin Commission created a special body of regulation to implement that provision of the Clean Water Act called Special Protection Waters. So we ended up with 197 miles of river declared Special Protection Waters, and the goal of the Special Protection Waters program is to protect existing water quality. When shale gas development came to our watershed in about 2008, or threatened to come to our watershed, we immediately went to the Delaware River Basin Commission and said, you cannot meet the standard of protecting existing water quality if shale gas development is allowed to take place in our watershed. And in response to that, the Delaware River Basin Commission put in place a moratorium against drilling and fracking until such time as they pass special regulations that would allow drilling and fracking and protect existing water quality. To date, through a lot of advocacy and hard work and politicking, we have kept them from passing regulations that would claim to meet that standard, again, making the case it's not possible. And as a result, the moratorium still stands. But the commissioners could schedule a vote and decide to attempt to pass regulations which could lift that moratorium, and then we'd be in another world, and it would be in a world of litigation, because my organization, Delaware Riverkeeper Network, is primed and prepared to challenge such a body of regulation if they ever attempted to put them in place. But I think at this point everybody recognizes you can't protect existing water quality and have drilling and fracking in our watershed.
There must be some complexity with governors of different states, you know, sitting on that board and having to come to a decision together. It's like it's wonderful that the protection is happening, but you know, there is also, I mean, I imagine it's a little bit of a political situation there.
There is an incredible moving political dynamic here that we are constantly trying to keep track of, but you know, there are a lot of backroom conversations that we are unaware of. But from what we can tell at this point, right? The state of New York has a de facto prohibition on shale gas development. Not that there is a moratorium or a prohibition, right? But there is a lengthy process that has to be undertaken in order for one to get permissions to drill or frack. And so that has really raised the bar and provided a very, very vitally important level of protection to New York State. Down in Delaware, they are at the bottom of the watershed. They don't want to see drilling and fracking because they are not convinced that their water at the bottom of the watershed could be protected if drilling and fracking were allowed to move forward. Pennsylvania is all for it. Gung-ho, drill, 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 frack, frack, frack. They don't care, right? The governor is, frankly, totally bought off by the drilling industry. In New Jersey, it's much more of a nuanced dynamic. And so we have a governor who's trying to be a lot more politic. I don't think he is against drilling and fracking, but he is not jumping up to be viewed as its champion like Governor Corbett. And then, of course, we have the federal dynamic, and that is a constant moving target as well. But I think you know, there is a lot of recognition of the incredibly important values of keeping healthy this river and watershed that are still pristine and protected from drilling because of the huge volume of people, the 17 million people that rely upon it for drinking water, as well as the hundreds of thousands of jobs and billions of dollars that have been documented to depend upon our healthy Delaware River. Except, of course, Governor Corbett, who really doesn't care how he's viewed. He just wants to be the champion for drilling and fracking. But I don't think anybody else wants to be viewed as that. And so that's why New Jersey and the president's representative are the ones that seem more in play, while New York and Delaware seem presently to be in the camp of no drilling, no fracking in the watershed. It's just too great a danger.
You know, it's interesting. Sometimes, having for many years, you know, I've been speaking more to people who are aware and active and all of that for the last 7 years or so. But before that, I still have many people that I've addressed for many years who will say things like, oh, well, you know, I don't like to get into politics and, you know, don't tell me what you're against, tell me what you're for. But, you know, there's always two sides to every coin because, you know, you're showing that, you know, we have to get more sophisticated about getting involved in politics to do things like protect water that we rely on for health and healthy food and all the rest of it. And in addition, you know, it's like people say, oh, well, the term anti-fracking, but it's really pro-water. But, you know,
exactly.
It's like,
Yeah, I mean, you're really protecting the water, and that's what's also so clear from the mission and everything of your organization. Let's talk a little bit for people who are unfamiliar, you know, with what it looks like in the perspective from a state like Pennsylvania, where, as you clearly stated, the governor is really not that concerned about public opinion in a certain sense, but is really, you know, kind of wholeheartedly, you know, kind of placed himself in the camp for fracking. As a neighboring state to New York, where I reside, I'm pretty, you know, aware, although probably not minutely up to date right now, about what fracking has wrought in Pennsylvania. But maybe you could give listeners who are unfamiliar with that a kind of a picture of it.
Yeah, so in particularly the western part of the state, you know, drilling and fracking have been moving forward at a record pace. And we really have thousands of wells that have gone in and many more thousands that are going in.
In the western part of the state? In the western part of the state?
In the central and the western part of the state, yes, mm-hmm. Not in the eastern part where the Delaware River watershed is.
Right.
And you know, there are many ways to characterize the level of impact. There have been investigations that where when you look at the records, right, not every violation or incident is reported for any number of good or bad reasons. But, you know, one investigation showed that of the investigative violations, that one in six investigations across a five-year period found that oil and gas activity had disrupted water supplies, either temporarily or seriously enough to require water replacement by the company. Over from 2005 to 2012 in Pennsylvania, 30 million gallons of water, so 30,000 million gallons, 30 billion gallons of water have been used for fracking. In just 2012, 1.2 billion gallons of wastewater has resulted from drilling and fracking in Pennsylvania. And of course, that wastewater includes very dangerous toxins, including very often radioactive materials. This wastewater is so toxic, they don't know how to get rid of it. And that's why they're mainly sort of shipping it to places like Ohio, where they're trying to inject it into the ground to seal off for forever. The Nature Conservancy has estimated that in Pennsylvania, 60,000 to 150,000 acres of forest could be lost to the new pipeline construction that's going to be necessary to support the ongoing well pads and drilling and fracking that's in Pennsylvania. I mean, these are astronomical numbers. But really, when it comes down to it, we have real people, real lives, real families, real streams that are getting sick, that are getting contaminated, that are getting irreparably damaged. And in the absence of a government and a governor that is willing to protect them, you know, they are becoming desperate. So it's a very serious situation in the other portions of Pennsylvania outside of our watershed, where drilling and fracking is being allowed to just proliferate at an increasing pace across those portions of Pennsylvania. And so even though I am fighting very, very hard to keep shale gas development and drilling and fracking out of the Delaware River watershed, I am fighting equally hard to help protect those communities that are already suffering, because, one, it is morally the right thing to do because these people and these environments truly are suffering. But, two, you know, there are sort of two ways to look at it. By proving that shale gas development, that drilling and fracking are not appropriate or safe for the Delaware River watershed, we are proving that it is not safe for any river, any watershed, or any community, number one. And in the reverse is also true. By going forth and protecting communities that are already suffering from drilling and fracking and showing the incredible level of harm that they are experiencing, we are also making the point that you should not allow this industrial activity to be happening anywhere in Pennsylvania, and certainly not within our watershed where right now it doesn't happen. So you know, we just sort of consider protecting the communities that are already being harmed is well in concert with our mission of protecting our river as well, because when it comes down to it, you know, we're all one big community, and we owe it to one another.
Mm-hmm. You know, this brings up another point that I think it's really important to go into, which is, you know, this is an industrial development that, you know, a multinational industry is promoting. You know, it's having economic benefit to them. A lot of the attendant gas, as we know, you know, is while there's been a promise of energy independence, you know, there's rapid push to export the gas internationally in the form of liquefied natural gas called LNG in order to command higher prices. You know, and so as a result, you know, this Wall Street multinational push has kind of invaded many communities across the country, but, you know, Pennsylvania is really the poster child for, you know, a total green light in this direction. The other thing that's being sacrificed, along with, you know, the health and air, water, and food quality of these regions, and in fact their community cohesion, is actually democracy itself. I was shocked to read the other day that you know, employees of Pennsylvania, of the government, had been instructed to ignore reports by citizens of contamination or health problems. I mean, you know, far from tracking this in order to kind of see what's going on and protect citizens, they were instructed to ignore citizens. And I think that unless, you know, people follow very closely what's going on in Pennsylvania, it might be new and shocking to them to really learn the kinds of things that you know, go down in terms of overriding what people traditionally expect their government to be doing. Can you share with our listeners, you know, that story and other examples of that?
Yeah, I mean, it really, as you say, I think shocking is a good word for it, but it doesn't even seem to capture the immensity and the enormity of what is happening in Pennsylvania and Pennsylvania government. But yeah, we did learn, and this was because of individuals who worked in the health department in the state of Pennsylvania after they left the agency. They have come forth and said that, as you said, they were instructed not to follow up on phone calls where people were reporting that they were having health issues associated with drilling and fracking. They were given a list of sort of magic words that if they were at a meeting or taking a phone call and one of the magic words was mentioned, which might implicate drilling or fracking, you know, that the staffer was to not be responsive, whether it was on the phone in the moment or in terms of follow-up. And as a result, we have had an incredible sweeping under the rug of the health impacts of shale gas development in Pennsylvania. We do not have a government agency that is genuinely looking into how people's health is being harmed by this industrial activity. I do know, you know, one of the things that's also troubling is even when you have a legislator that's really committed to this issue, the governor has such a tight stranglehold on his agencies that even elected officials at the state level in Pennsylvania have been having trouble getting this issue dealt with. I know that Pennsylvania State Senator Leach's office has been working for several years now to fight for analysis of the health ramifications of drilling that is happening in Pennsylvania communities. They've been seeking funding time and time again to get an analysis, to get follow-up, to get help for residents that are being harmed, whose health is being harmed by drilling and fracking. And they have not been able to get traction with those efforts. And we are hopeful, I am hopeful, that this this revelation from these employees, these brave, brave employees coming forth to say what is really happening within the health department in Pennsylvania is going to help Senator Leach advance the efforts he's been working on for years. I mean, even a state senator has not been able to circumvent the stranglehold that Governor Corbett has had on his agencies that are working so hard to allow drilling and fracking in every community. I think another really good example of government run amok when it comes to drilling is a piece of legislation passed in 2012 called Act 13. Act 13 was an incredibly pro-drilling piece of legislation that was rammed through by Governor Corbett and his cronies in the legislature, and it did a lot of bad things, But just by way of example, one of the ways that it was designed to ensure drilling and fracking could proliferate at increasing speeds across Pennsylvania was that they mandated that municipalities had to allow drilling sites in every portion of their communities, that they were not allowed to use their zoning authority to limit where drilling and fracking could happen. And so, as a result, drilling and fracking, as a result of Act 13, would be allowed to happen in every part of every community across Pennsylvania, even as close as 300 feet from a home, from a hospital, from a daycare center, from a playground. You could have a drilling site with the well pad, with the drilling, with the compressors, with the open frack waste pits, that close to people's homes. And there was not a thing that a municipality or a municipal official using their zoning authority, their authority to protect Pennsylvanians could do about it. Which is why, I mean, and, you know, so that is, you know, that is an incredible overreach designed to strip everybody of authority, of any authority that they might have to protect our communities from drilling and fracking. And when I talk about protecting our communities, I mean protecting their environment as well as protecting the quality of their lives, their homes, their health, their safety.
And there was a provision at one time, although I believe it has been ruled on by, the Pennsylvania court, in which they were even, were they not, prohibiting doctors for reporting back to patients on blood work that may have contained, revealed that, you know, the people had any kind of fracking chemical. This was deemed a corporate trade secret. And therefore proprietary, such that a doctor could not even obtain the information without agreeing to not tell the patient about it.
Yeah, that was one of the provisions, is one of the provisions in Act 13 that we are still litigating. That provision, we can talk about the incredible success we've had in Act 13 and what I think it should inspire in other states. But just to answer your question, there is a gag rule in Act 13 which says that of course, we all know that the drilling companies have long been given the right to keep secret their precious recipe for their slurry of toxic chemicals that they use in the fracking process. But that if a doctor had a patient come to them with health harms they believe to be the result of nearby drilling or fracking, and the doctor wanted information about what was in the fracking fluid that was happening in this nearby well site, the only way the doctor could get that information in order to be able to do the health analysis and provide the help to their patients that was needed was that they have to sign an agreement to keep the information absolutely confidential only to themselves. So if they got the information, they could not discuss with their own patients you know, what the patients have been exposed to in terms of toxic chemicals or radioactive material in these frac fluids, the doctor could not consult with a colleague or a specialist to help them figure out, you know, what was the reason that this person was suffering so in terms of their health, and therefore come up with a remedy to help them. The doctor had to hold, you know, the information totally to themselves, which is an absolutely ridiculous, you know,
expectation. That's a travesty, because they don't, they may not, a local doctor may not be, you know, an expert in, you know, in these various chemicals, and they may need to consult a specialist. This goes on with physicians all the time, in order to protect a patient's life.
Absolutely.
You know, yeah, this is really tipped so far in the wrong direction. It's, you know, it's really incredible. Let's take a break now for station identification. We'll just hear a few things from Progressive Radio Network, and then we'll be right back with you talking with Maya Van Rossum, the Delaware Riverkeeper, about the Delaware River, fracking, the state of health and democracy and the environment in Pennsylvania and surrounding areas. Stay with us, listeners, for the second half of the show. Welcome back, listeners, to the second half of Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy. We're here with you every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. Today we're doing a really terrific show on the Delaware River, and the Delaware Riverkeeper is with us today on the show, Maya Van Rossum, who leads the Delaware Riverkeeper Network, protecting the river and a watershed that feeds water to a number of major East Coast states, as well as updating us on the contamination to the environment and the corruption of democracy happening around fracking activities in the Northeast. If you're just joining us, you can get the first half of the show in the Connect the Dots archives later this afternoon. If you've been enjoying the program all along, please pass it along to friends who may be interested, as well as like us on iTunes. If you'd like more information and would like to follow the work and participate in the actions of the Delaware Riverkeeper Network, you can go to their website, www.delawareriverkeeper.org. There's a lot of current information. There are terrific gifts in a gift shop that, you know, you can support the network, and you can participate in action from wherever you are in their campaigns to keep the longest undammed river east of the Mississippi flowing freely and staying pure and clean. So back with us again here for the second half is Maya Van Rossum. Thank you so much, Maya. This has been so, you know, incredibly informative. You know, I'm gonna ask you a little bit of a different question right now. You know, I'm currently working on a blog, which will probably be on Alternet and some other outlets, about the fact that, you know, we have this dilemma as a society in that we need to follow the news, we need to stay up to date, we need to participate as citizens, or we just leave corrupt politicians, as you've mentioned, Pennsylvania's Governor Corbett, and others, to just kind of run roughshod over our rights as individuals, as communities, and as well as our natural environment, that we really need not, you know, we need it for life, actually. If we have a contaminated environment, as a health reporter, I can say that we become, you know, polluted and contaminated and have a host of health problems. And, you know, conventional medicine isn't really prepared for this and isn't that good at tracking it, at following it, at treating it. So, you know, we're kind of in a weird limbo of treating pretty serious illnesses when we allow our environment and our own bodies to become polluted. At the same time, following this kind of information is sad. It's upsetting. It's disturbing. It overwhelms people. And one of the things that I'm currently kind of investigating is what we can do to stay involved, because we need to do that as citizens, while at the same time acknowledging how we feel about this and how we need to also take care of ourselves so that this barrage of really awful things that we're kind of tolerating or enabling as a society doesn't get to us, and then people turn off the news because they can't stand, facing up to it. Do you have any suggestions? Have you ever dealt with that? I know you're probably not preparing for this question, but having done this, I mean, you've been at the DRN since 1996. That's quite a long time. So, you know, I'm wondering whether you have any insights about that.
Yeah, yes. I think about it a lot. You know, it's one of those things, you know that old saying, ignorance is bliss?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think when you work on an issue like shale gas development or really any environmental issue,
mm-hmm.
or you have some devastating development happening in your community that you have to drive by every day, I mean, truly, that saying comes to life. Ignorance is bliss. And so often, you know, it is much easier to hide our heads in the sand and to sort of just think about, you know, our immediate present and having a lovely cup of coffee or something
mm-hmm.
than these devastating issues that are happening to neighbors across the state, the region, the watershed, the nation, the world. I mean, and I think that the way, I try to keep focused myself, working
mm-hmm.
on these issues day in and day out, is really focusing on being proactive about it. I think I know I feel much better when I see that there is an injustice, I see a violence to the environment, and I don't try to hide my head in the sand, but I try to join with my neighbors and take some positive step every day, no matter how small, even if it's going to the website of your local environmental organization or community health organization and writing one letter that they asked you to write. Taking one simple step each day that you can focus on and feel good about, and then other days, you know, taking that larger step of turning out to a rally, making some phone calls, maybe organizing a community viewing of, you know, one of Josh Fox's incredible movies about shale gas development, you know, Gaslands 2, in order to broaden the community that is joining with you to battle this devastation. Because at the end of the day, when you're putting your head in on the pillow at night, no matter how much you tried to block out the sadness and the violence of the day that's happening to our environment and our communities, it will come back to your mind. And if you can remember that you took at least one step every day to make a difference, I think that you will go to sleep feeling good about yourself and feeling more empowered
mm-hmm.
and able to act the next day. And it is really the absolute truth. The reason why we don't have drilling in the Delaware River watershed is because 70,000 people joined their voices together to stand up against it. The reason why we've had many successes across the region, across the nation, in New York State, where, you know, we do not have drilling and fracking running rampant, which could have very easily happened, but for the fact that the community joined together and rose up together to demand from the governor that he not let it happen. And, of course, every day is a renewed battle. But we have these incredible successes under our belt. Even the communities where drilling and fracking is already happening, you know, the successes are happening there. And we will, of course, talk about the incredible win we had in defeating that Act 13. That was an incredible success that has provided protection for communities that are already suffering. So we have wins when everybody tries to take at least one step every day to make a difference, because by joining our voices together, we really do have success. And that's what we need to try to stay focused on, even in those moments of frustration. And remember that it's not just about us, right? It's about the people and the children that are going to be here 100 years from now that are going to look back upon us and say, did they really do what they could to help protect me so that I could watch an eagle fly, I could have a healthy glass of water, my community wasn't underwater from sea level rise and devastated by climate change, or did they hide their heads in the sand? And I think we all want to feel good to know that when they reflect back on all of us, they're going to know we did our best to protect them.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. And, you know, I think it's important to talk about this because, you know, there are a lot of people taking action. And also, if you need a timeout, you know, because one of the things I've noticed is that, you know, we all need a timeout at some time or other. And also, people are different. Some people are more, you know, naturally introverted and some more naturally extroverted, and people who are introverted get more readily drained and need more of timeouts. And it's okay. You know, it's okay to be that person. It's okay to admit you're that person. And it's still all right to participate. What very often happens is that, you know, the empathic introverts get together and then they all hold hands and agree that they're going to ignore all of this kind of stuff. And, you know, honestly, and I'm an introvert myself. You know, and I need more timeouts, but I do it, just for all the reasons that you mentioned. Now, one of the things that's kind of a new development to me in some of this front is that, when I first got involved, all of the action in Pennsylvania, which we've been discussing in the first half of the show, was happening, in the eastern part of the state, and now you say there's this rapid expansion in the western part of the state. I didn't even understand that there was ample shale gas in the shale in the western part of the state. Is what, you know, what's going on? What areas are being developed now?
You know, if you go around, really, it's a whole swath across. If you go from New York State and you cut down across Pennsylvania and you cut down what into Virginia, you just cut across that whole swath. I mean, the shale is underlying all of it. I mean, you know, so there are many, many parts of Pennsylvania where drilling is already happening. Butler County, out by Pittsburgh. I mean, you know, the list goes on and on. And it really is thousands and thousands and thousands of well and thousands more that are coming. So there is an incredible proliferation and people really are suffering. And the Act 13 we talked about that would have allowed, had it been allowed to stand, shale gas development, drilling and fracking to happen in every part of every community as close as 300 feet from homes, hospitals, daycare centers, playgrounds, you know, was all designed to feed the fury of drilling and fracking that is happening in central and western and the western parts of Pennsylvania.
Wow, that's amazing. So it's really now become the whole state. And has this been a tremendous economic boon? I mean, when you actually calculate the costs, is it, you know, is it as terrific as promised for everyone?
No, of course not, right? The drilling companies have great marketing firms. And, of course, you have some landowners who have benefited economically, some in you know, the very short term when they were signing the leases. Some of them are getting royalties. But when you look at the community level, there's a lot more loss than there is gain, even on the economics of it. How the way the drilling industry likes to be able to claim that there's a proliferation of jobs, if they have a job that just lasts a few weeks, a few months associated with a drilling site that then ends, and then there's another job that person might go to drill for a few weeks or a few months, that person's engagement in those two separate positions, even though they're for a short period of time, are counted as two jobs by the drilling industry, for example. I mean, there's a lot of monkeying of the numbers. But there's also been a lot of good analysis about the economics of drilling. And what we really do find is that communities are economically being very burdened in terms of when drilling to their community, how their roads are being beat up, increases in crime and the economics of having to respond to that, that the jobs that are coming are very often going to people who are coming from outside the region, that you have a boom-bust cycle, just like you had with coal. So you might have a temporary, maybe it's a short term, maybe it's a little bit of a longer term, but it is either way a temporary growth in jobs and development and creating housing and the like that then falls off when a well, you know, starts to decline and the industry decides to cap it and go away. That really, when you look on the community level, that the other really long-term sustaining jobs, you know, industries that stay in a community, public teaching jobs and the like, are economically far more valuable to a community in the short term and the long term than the drilling. And then, of course, you know, and that's just looking at the at the dollars and the cents that have been calculated. But as you and I have talked about, you know, what gets lost in all of this debate about the numbers are people's lives and the fact that people are getting sick. Children are waking up with bloody noses and rashes, and adults who have private businesses, literally their minds are getting befuddled by whatever it is that they're breathing in, and they can't think properly to keep their business going. People have sunk, you know, most of us, the biggest asset we own is our home, and home that value of our home is incredibly important. And we have so many people in these communities where drilling is happening that they spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on buying their dream house. And then a well pad goes in next door, and suddenly their house is only worth maybe 10% of its value. And they can't sell the house because, one, nobody wants to buy it living next to this industrial site. But, two, banks don't want to give mortgages, and insurance companies don't want to give, you know, the necessary insurance coverage for somebody to even buy that home. So you are stuck in the misery of being in an industrial zone because the value of your home has plummeted, and you don't have any viable way of selling it. So we have so many different ways, you know, that people have lost their water. Imagine being told that you can't drink the water that's coming out of your faucet, and, you know, if you want to bathe your child in the tub, you know, you better make sure you keep the windows open because the gases that are going to come off of that water that you're using to fill that tub might create an explosive condition in your home. You know, and would you want to put your child in that situation? I mean, it's incredibly devastating what is happening to people's lives. So on the dollars and cents front, the calculation doesn't work out, right? Shale gas drilling, fracking is not economically beneficial on a community level. The industry certainly gets rich. Maybe a few landowners get some money. But on a community level, the economics of it are a loss. But you also have the health issues, the loss of water, the loss of quality of life, the loss of safety, the loss of the enjoyment of your home, future medical expenses, maybe literally the loss of your life. And, you know, I don't think that that's worth it for a few people to get some extra dollars.
Mm-hmm. There, you know, there's this myth that it can be done safely. And, you know, oh, well, it's just the technology, you know, it could be done safely, it could be done in a way that, you know, there's always this promise. I mean, I have a lot of people who follow me on Facebook, and, you know, I frequently post articles and updates on this topic on my Facebook page. And, you know, I had someone who was an engineer and saying, oh, but, you know, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, it could be done safely. Of course, you know, it's been going on now for, you know, 9 years, and they haven't figured out a way to do this. It's not being well monitored or inspected. So, you know, you could say that you would legislate to do it safely, but, you know, there are two questions. One, how? And two, are there, you know, the kinds of public officials and inspections in place to guarantee that promise of safety? I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
You know, the answer to both is no. And you really can't do it safely. The technology doesn't exist. The level of violence to the landscape that gets done cannot be overcome in any way. And as you said, and we don't have the resources to even monitor what is actually happening to really be able to ascertain the level of harm. But one of the things I want to make sure, because I know we only have a little bit more time, but I want to make sure that I share with your listeners, which is such an incredibly important development that I hope will inspire action not just across the region, but across the nation and maybe even across the world. And it's this incredible success we had challenging that pro-gas drilling Act 13. In Pennsylvania, there is an environmental rights amendment in the Pennsylvania Constitution, and it is included in the Declaration of Rights portions of the Constitution, which means they are rights that people had that they reserved from government, right? That's what the Declaration of Rights provision is, like the property rights and the right to freedom of speech, right? These are all personal, individual rights that we have as people. Well, in Pennsylvania, we have an environmental rights amendment, and we, the Delaware Riverkeeper Network, we were the only environmental organization, and seven towns joined forces to challenge Act 13. And the argument that the Delaware Riverkeeper Network brought to the table was that this pro-drilling piece of legislation was a violation of the Pennsylvania Constitution, which says that the people have a right to clean air, pure water, and to the preservation of the natural, scenic, historic, and aesthetic values of the environment. That Pennsylvania's public natural resources, not just their publicly owned lands, their public natural resources are the common property of all the people, including generations yet to come. And as trustee of these resources, the Commonwealth shall conserve and maintain them for the benefit of all the people. And we use that amendment as the underpinning of our challenge to Act 13. And we got the most incredible Pennsylvania Supreme Court decision in December 19th of 2013, in which a plurality of a quite conservative Pennsylvania Supreme Court and a decision written by the conservative Chief Justice of that court, which declared very clearly that the right, in declaring portions of Act 13 unconstitutional, they did it on the basis of the recognition that the right to pure water, clean air, and to the preservation of the natural, scenic, historic, and aesthetic values of the environment are inherent and indefeasible rights of we as people, that they're not rights that were given to us by our Pennsylvania Constitution, but that they are rights preserved by the Constitution. And as a result of that constitutional provision, every level of government has an obligation to protect our right to pure water, clean air, and a healthy environment. And they have to protect those rights not just for the people who are here today, but for the generations that to come, which really raised the bar. And so they use this Environmental Rights Amendment and those descriptions of the amendment to say that significant portions of Act 13 were unconstitutional because, just as you said, that the shale gas development is so incredibly devastating to the environment. They were the Pennsylvania Supreme Court justice that used language like it does violence to the landscape, that it will unquestionably has and will have a lasting and undeniably detrimental impact on the quality of our groundwater, our ambient air, and aspects of our natural environment that are critical to the public interest. It was just an amazing opinion that really upheld our right as people to a healthy environment. And what I am hopeful as the Delaware Riverkeeper is that this decision will inspire every other state across the nation to seek and secure an environmental rights amendment like the one that exists in Pennsylvania, and that maybe even eventually we get a federal one, because declaring our right to pure water, clean air, and a healthy environment as an inherent and indefeasible right that government has an obligation to protect for present and future generations is such a high bar of protection that is vitally important. Everybody get one. And there are only two other states that the Pennsylvania Supreme Court identified as having provisions comparable to Pennsylvania's. They haven't been used as beautifully as Pennsylvania's was just used to protect their environment. But even other states that have environmental provisions in their constitutions don't have them written in such a way as to give this high level of protection. So we have a new project called the Generations Project that we are putting together to try to support and inspire people going out and seeking passage of environmental rights amendments of this kind in every state in the country.
This is fantastic. You know, this really kind of answers the question I asked earlier about, you know, what keeps you going in the face of this. And this shows that from the worst kinds, you know, of conditions in a state that you can possibly have, come the, you know, the human, you know, drive and creativity and brilliance and, you know, dedication to pass this kind of amendment, you know, and actually to pioneer this kind of amendment, which really should be adopted everywhere, and represent, you know, the best kind of umbrella and pushback. And probably it wouldn't have come out of Pennsylvania if you hadn't had to really think long and hard and face up to this problem ahead of other people. Bravo. I mean, this is really amazing.
And the thing is, the amendment was passed in the 70s in response to the devastation of the coal industry and the forestry industry. So right now, we have, you know, other states that are facing other kinds of devastation and environmental harms that really raise to that same high level of inspiration for securing this kind of proactive protection. So, you know, the groundwork, we believe, is laid everywhere. It's just a matter of people finding the right path to get there, the proper environmental rights amendment. You know, not just any recognition in the Constitution. That doesn't do it for you. So if there are people in other states listening to your show that are interested in figuring out how to do this, we are happy to help work with them, and they should just get in touch with me through the website that you mentioned, www.DelawareRiverkeeper.org, because we think this is a movement, like I said, that should just sweep across the nation and maybe even, you know, hopefully one day rise to the federal level so that we genuinely have our inherent and indefeasible rights to pure water, clean air, and a healthy environment recognized and protected, because they do belong to us and the people yet to come. And it's not okay for the government to be selling it off to the drilling industry, the development industry, or any other industry just so they can make a few bucks and stay in office.
Well, thank you. I so agree with you, and I'm sure our listeners do too. Remember, that's DelawareRiverkeeper.org. Thank you so much, Maya Van Rossum, the Delaware Riverkeeper, for being with us today here on Connect the Dots. It's just been terrific. Good luck with all your work. Contact the Delaware Riverkeeper to learn more about this amendment. So glad to have had you here on the show with us, Maya. Thank you so much.
And I'm so grateful for your show.
Yeah, we're delighted to do it. Thank you also, listeners, for being with us for this edition of Connect the Dots. We'll be back next Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern. I'm Allison Rose Levy. Be well.